One more segment for a Wednesday morning. Let's talk. Scott Giese with you again. The Ironhead, Jeff Byers. I swear it's a food assignment. It's got to be something with food today. It's always food with him. He'll be back in here tomorrow. I'll actually be out tomorrow. We'll both be back on Friday. But thank you for listening to the program. And for our final segment, we're going to welcome to the show local state representative Scott Conklin. First of all, Scott, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hey, Scott, I want to thank you for having me. And when the Ironhead comes back, still tell him I remember the perfect waffle maker that we had that somehow he got possession of. But please bring that up to him.
See, it's food. It's always food with this guy. It's like, how does he pull this off? We've been after you for a while, so thank you for joining us this morning. Now, if I'm correct, you're down in Harrisburg where things, I guess, this week are quite busy. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we're leading up to the famous budget debate, which will be coming up soon. And in that process, there's a lot of work. I'm the chairman of Commerce now. So there's a lot of work we have to do to get legislation in line to be able to get the budget passed every year. It's all the stuff that the public, you know, if you're really bored, you get to watch. But outside of that, it's better just to live your life and enjoy it.
Okay, I like that advice. Now, the obvious question, Scott, is this actually going to get all done by June 30th when it's supposed to? Yes or no?
We're always optimistic. I mean, we're always optimistic to get it done. I believe we're going to have another on-time budget. When I first was here, we were talking about huge deficits on how we could backfill them. Now we're talking about huge surpluses of where we all have a different idea of who needs it most.
Well, you are sitting, what is it, $14 billion state surplus. That's a lot of money. So as you're working on a new budget, is part of the idea, okay, let's start tapping into that a little bit so we don't have to, like, raise taxes and so on. I mean, is that part of the mix here?
That's folks like myself want that, because we understand when you're looking at property taxes are the very worst thing that hits a homeowner and the public, because even if you rent, you end up paying for it. So anything that we can do to lower those property taxes by backfilling those local funds that, whether it's the county, whether it's the school board that tax you, the property owner, that if we can assist those individuals in helping to keep those taxes down, that's a huge, huge, huge step forward.
All right, so where are the potholes then with this budget right now? In other words, where the two sides are, you know, arguing, not agreeing, and so on. Because they're there every year. What are the disagreements this year?
This is where I'm supposed to be politically correct and tell you that we're all doing due diligence. But at the end of the day, it's about political gamesmanship. Let's be honest with each other. It's been that way since we started our political journey. You know, it's always good to go back and forth. So when you get down to the nitty-gritty, a lot of it is just the old political gamesmanship, you know, back and forth. And at the end of the day, you hope folks get to say what they want to say, get their ideas out there, and we come up with that terrible word called a compromised budget that most everybody can agree on.
All right, now you're a Democrat, okay, so where are the compromises? In other words, give us an issue or two where you're fairly certain in order to pass this budget, you're going to have to compromise on this or this. What are some of those things?
I think when you look at the budget right now, what the governor's asking for and what the Republican, mainly the Republican Senate and the Republican House members are, is how much of an increase do we give the school districts? How much of an increase do we give, you know, your Women's Outreach Center, those type of, you know, Office of Aging? And that's where we have to come up with a compromise. Some members believe we should give it all away to them. Others members believe that, you know, we shouldn't give a penny out, keep the surplus. And then, as I always said, not to brag, most budgets get done by those folks who are pragmatic or pragmatists. And I put myself in that category to where we look and we say, you know what, we do have to increase these certain line items just to keep them up with the cost of living at the very least, if not add more to, you know, perhaps lower the property taxes. And that's normally where we end up at the end of the day, is that those folks in the middle that would like to see less or more, but they understand we have to keep government going. We can't shut it down. We have to make sure, as I learned years ago, just thinking of it as a cruise ship gone from, you know, Pennsylvania to England. Our job as many times is to make sure you get there safely, fed well, and without any further delays in your life. And that's much of the budget itself. We have to understand that if we shut down, for folks like myself, we hurt the poor and the elderly and those individuals more by working with my colleagues and coming up with figures that we both may not be able to digest the best, but at least we can digest it.
All right. Now, the school funding issue we've covered on the program. We've had guests, and there was a court case, and the court case ruled in favor of those poor school districts who were complaining, hey, there's not fair funding here in Pennsylvania, and so there's supposed to be a change in the formula and so on. Scott, is that going to happen this year, this formula change, all the changes that need to be made so that there's, I don't know, more equitable funding for all public schools? Is that going to happen this year, or is it still down the line?
Scott, we hope. Back in the mid-2000s, we actually had a costing-out study that we were able to fund schools more fairly. Administrations changed. The costing study was ripped up and thrown out the door the way we funded. There's hope. There's a few things that are the sticking points. We have to do some charter school reform. Stop the loopholes that allow much of your tax dollars rather than a student getting, say, $5,500, $5,700 to go to a charter school. It's not really prevalent in Center County. It's more when you get into the urban districts that this happens, that there's no guidelines. You'll see a student, I would have been a perfect candidate for a charter school student, above average grades, but I stuttered. So it means they would use me as a special needs student because I'd have to have speech therapy. So what they would do is that rather than get the $5,700, I'd be a good $21,000 student, and that comes directly from your public school funding, which then deletes the amount of money that your public school has on top of the transportation of the children and everything. We really do need to address those disparities, because I'm not against charters, I'm not against privates, I'm not against any of those folks. We just need to have the criteria put in place. That has to be put in place, and we also have to understand that when we give money for school districts, whether it's your, and remember, when I say school districts, those are charters as well, that when we're able to give them enough money to run the district, they lower your property taxes. So it's a chain of events to get us to where we have to go. I'm hoping we can do it. I'm hoping we can do charter school reform funding. I'm hoping that we can get there. There's always hope, because if you don't have it, you'll just give up. And that's the reason every year in and year out we continue this fight. But it's getting pretty bleak for the public school systems right now, and that relates to your school taxes.
I mean, Scott, is there some hard date? I know that court case I mentioned, is there some hard date? Like, state government must get this figured out by this date. Is there such a thing? I don't even know that.
It didn't say the time frame we had. It said we had to do it. For folks like myself, I wish they would have put that time frame in. I wish they would have said that you have to have this done by, whether it's 2024, 2026, whatever it is. That would have helped us out much more. So again, we continue this dance back and forth. You have, you know, that misinformation that many elected officials put out for reasons is beyond my, you know, comprehensive, but it seems to help them get reelected. But the bottom line is, if we do not fund your public schools, and a charter school is a public school, it's a non-boundary school when we talk about PIAA sports, but it's still a public school. We need to reform the way the way we're funding them, and I know there's some charter schools who are going to be upset about that, but again, I'm just for fairness. And the second thing we have to do, we really do have to fund our local, whether it's Penns Valley or State College or Bald Eagle or Phillipsburg or Tyrone or Clinton, wherever it's from. We have to give those school districts the resources, because those are elected school board members. Those are folks from our community that run those budgets. So we have to also give them the funding mechanism in place that they don't have to year in and year out increase our property taxes, and able to fund those young people to give them the tools they need.
All right, let's move over to the PIAA thing. You had a news conference last week. There is a House Bill 1983 about separate high school championships. Briefly, what is this bill? What's the issue?
So, to give you the history of it, the PIAA in 1972 started what they hang their hat on, the law of 1972. And what basically this law of 1972 and the law of 1974 did is that at that time you saw school districts, and mainly the Catholic schools, were closing down. So in order for them to survive, in order for them to actually compete in the PIAA, we said, okay, you can consolidate, but you can go outside of your boundary to get students. So this legislation gave that's where the boundary, non-boundary rules came. Most of them came into effect because those schools were then able to go outside of their boundary, bring students in, and they were able to actually give them the ability to compete with the high school teams. So let's begin to fast forward the law. The law never addressed, the legislature had never said that we cannot have separate playoff systems. In fact, and I'll try to get this grasped in a way to the way that helps. In fact, here's something that you're not going to believe. 1983, I introduced it because the PIAA says we can't do it without your legislative approval. Now, here's where the tricky part comes in. The PIAA doesn't even need our legislative approval, and I'll take you step by step why. 1972, the very first law was passed. 1974, there was an amendment to the law that said second-class counties could participate. Neither one addressed playoff systems. And people would say, well, what's that mean? Well, there were no playoff systems in 1972, nor was there playoff systems when the law was readdressed in 1974. The playoff system started with the district playoffs in 1983, I believe, was the year. They started, it was done by a lot of coaches who said, you know what, we'd really like a championship. So the PIAA, and if you read their charter, says the board of directors of the PIAA is the sole oversight of the playoffs. So in 1983, without any legislative help, we were not involved whatsoever, the PIAA started your district championships. They said, this is really great. So in 1988, the coaches came to the PIAA and said, we would really like state championships. So in 1988, the PIAA started state championships without any legislative oversight. They have the authority to do that within their charter itself. The board of directors are the sole individuals who can oversee these events. So let's fast forward to 2015. 2015, the school says, you know what? We only have four divisions. These bigger schools are larger. These charter schools are beginning to grow. So they said, let's do six divisions for playoffs. And guess who wasn't involved again? The legislative body. So pre-COVID, 2017, 2018, 2019, and in fact, one of the meetings was right in State College, got pretty contentious, that the public schools were saying, we're competing with national all-star teams. Again, I'm not against non-boundary schools. They give these young people from bad zip codes many times, whether it's in Texas or California. They get to come here. They get to play. But it's become an unfair competitive advantage. One of the things sports does, it teaches kids competition fairness. So in 2015, they went to six divisions. But because of COVID, this was put on the back burner because nobody was doing anything. Now it's reared its ugly head again. If you saw the last playoffs, 10 of the last 12 were won by non-boundary schools. 25% of the schools are non-boundary schools. But even a wonderful team, it's called St. Joe's Prep, I think it's Prep, down in the Philadelphia area, they don't even play a state schedule. They play a national schedule. And then for the playoffs, they play, I think it's District 12, they play the playoffs in the mercy rule every team. So all what I'm saying is, hey, PIAA, I've done this legislation. As you well know, and we all know, many of our members are alumni of this. We know we can't even hold certain religious organizations responsible for raping children 30 years ago, molesting them in these glorious halls we have. So I'm a realist. So even though I did the legislation that says PIAA, you can do this, you already have it. It gets complicated, but their own work that they've done through 83, 88, 2015 has shown they have the authority. Their own charter says their own bylaws say they have the authority. What I'm saying is, at the end of the year, all my bill says is that they may have separate playoffs. New Jersey does them. Maryland does them. In fact, when coaches hear we're putting these kids together, they're like, you're insane. What are you doing? I mean, that's their words, not mine. So all what I'm saying is that let's when we get to the playoffs, let the PIAA, who already has the authority, I'll give it to you one more time if that's what it takes, but just look at these schools, keep it fair, boundary schools play boundary schools, not all playoffs, just those ones where it's becoming really prevalent, the disadvantage that a boundary school has playing a national all-star team. That's all what this thing does. It's not against any non-boundary schools. It's saying you guys do a great job. I'm not downing you. All I'm saying is when you get to this point, apples need to be with apples, oranges need to be with oranges.
Scott, we're actually out of time. We're going to play our music here. We're going to continue to follow this bill because we've had other guests like Doug Dyke from Bald Eagle area talking about, you know, that we should really do this. So we're going to continue to follow this. I hope we can have you on again sometime soon. Can we do that?
Anytime, my friend. Anytime. I apologize. It has been, this last year for me has just been
crazy.
A whirlwind of meeting days, 7 days a week, and I love every minute of it.
Appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.